This is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated May 29th, 2015. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with International Arts Council's Summer Exhibit Features Neighboring Cultures. Once a year, the Decatur Arts Council presents their international arts experience, highlighting a different culture, both its past and present. This year, the summer exhibit will celebrate the lifestyles of Chile and Argentina in the exhibit titled Chile and Argentina Neighboring Cultures. This has been a very interesting project and what I've metaphorically called an archaeological dig, said Sue Powell, gallery director for the Decatur Area Arts Council. Because there are not a bunch of Chilean and Argentine natives living in this area. The exhibit will open with food, crafts, and performances from both countries during the first Friday walk. The event will be from 5 to 7:30 p.m. Friday, June 5th, throughout the Ann Lloyd Gallery and the Madden Art Center, 125 North Water Street. Visitors will experience the lifestyles of the cultures through various forms of art as well as artifacts and textiles. The opening event is particularly lively and interesting because it brings together authentic art, music, dance, storytelling, and cuisine, Powell said. It has a lot of audience participation so guests can feel that they are immersed in the culture. Powell began planning the exhibit after meeting Jean-Paul Brandt, a graphic design artist from Chile, during a Millikan University event. As a curator, Brandt uses the collection to educate the world through Chilean graphic art posters. The exhibit won't be focused on just one poster, but in the whole display, Brandt said. Each poster shows different aspects from our culture, not in just a visual way, but rather what cares to our society today. The art has strong political expressions as well as responses to local concerns. In contrast, Berta Cardoso's artwork portrays the feeling and passion of the popular Argentinian dance, the tango. It is quite sensual dance and has been expanded to different parts of the world since it is a beautiful universal art and has strong people connection and affection, said Cardoso's husband, Luis Fernandez. Cardoso photographs people from Argentina and then, through mixed techniques, creates her final paintings. The songs are quite sad and always tell a story around troubles in couples and love, Fernandez said. June Arts Exhibits. Bicentennial Art Center. The Paris Art Center will be displaying the annual Paint Illinois Juried Exhibition until June 12th. Beginning June 19th, works by members of the River City Arts Association will be exhibited until July 17th. The organization is a group of artists from the Wabash Valley area in Terre Haute, Indiana. An artist reception will be from 5 to 6:30 p.m. Friday, June 19th. Blue Connection. Kat Scarum will be the artist in residence this summer for Millikan University's downtown student gallery. Scarum's paintings and drawings will be shown throughout the month. Decatur Airport Gallery. Paintings by Barbara Dove will be on display at the Airport Gallery. Flourishes Gallery and Studios. Five photographers took part in a four-day photo shoot in the deserts of Sedona, Arizona. Each of the five Illinois photographers will show their creations at the downtown Shelbyville Gallery. The show will be on exhibit until July 11th. Gallery 510. Jessica Disbrow will be the featured artist at the downtown Decatur's Gallery 510 Arts Guild. Jessica paints watercolor paintings of landscapes, still life, and portraits in an impressionistic style. Geertz Gallery, Parkland College's Geertz Gallery will feature Around the Block artists from our neighborhood in the gallery at 2400 West Bradley Avenue, Champaign. The juried art show will be a collaboration with other local arts organizations. The exhibit will run from June 15th through August 6th. An artist reception will be held from 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday, June 18th. with 7 p.m. gallery talk. The gallery will be closed July 2nd. For more information, visit www.artgallery.parkland.edu. That's artgallery.parkland.edu. Krannert Art Museum. University of Illinois Krannert Art Museum will continue the exhibit Artists Including Me by William Wegman in the Contemporary Gallery until July 25th, and With the Grain, Japanese woodblock prints from the post-war years in the Asian Gallery, which also will be ending July 25th. Excuse me. In the Galvin Knoll Gallery, Versions and Revisions will return with Speculative Visions of Pragmatic Architecture in the Galvin Knoll Annex. Both will be exhibited until July 25th. Lincoln Art Institute, oh my goodness, this goes on. throughout the month, members of the Logan County Arts will feature their whimsical artwork in a show titled Fun at the Lincoln Art Institute, 112 South McLean Street, Lincoln. The artists are not restricted or limited in their work, which includes the subject matter, the creation, the project, or the display of the work. Rock Springs Nature Center. Rock Springs Nature Center's North Wing Art Gallery will feature the photography of Alan and Chris Perry. The photographers will display their images of nature and wildlife. Katina Williams's photography will be exhibited in the South Gallery of the Nature Center. Both exhibits are on display until the end of June. Tarbell Arts Center, Eastern Illinois University Art Gallery, will display the art show Above and Beyond, worked by 3D Emeritus Art faculty in the main galleries. An open reception will be from 2 to 4 p.m. Sunday, June 14th. Beginning June 13th, the Brainerd Gallery will feature the exhibit Sights Unseen. Tours are available by appointment only. To schedule a tour, call 217-581-2787, that's 581-2787, or email Tarbell, T-A-R-B-L-E, Tarbell, at eiu.edu. Upstairs Gallery, the works of the Barnes Colony artists will be shown in the Decatur Public Library's second floor gallery during June. Macon County Fair rides back with optimism. Teresa Wilson can still remember the sense of uncertainty that lingered over the Macon County Fair. A lot of times it was a day-to-day thing, and we asked, should we just file for bankruptcy, said Wilson, treasurer of the fair board. While the financial situation is less than preferred, fair officials say they can see the light at the end of the tunnel. The Macon County Fair is set to return June 9th, a year after a fairground festival was held in its place. We knew last year that it wasn't going to be the same, so we didn't want to call it a fair, Wilson said. Hopefully we can get closer now to what people would expect at a fair. Among the events scheduled are two nights of rodeos, truck and tractor pulls, go-kart races, and a demolition derby, along with the usual carnival rides. The fair will also have a swine show, which Wilson said was an important part of bringing agricultural events back to the fairgrounds. Your mission as a fair is to teach agriculture, she said. We're not all the way there yet, but we're getting there. The Macon County Fair Board faced a nearly $300,000 deficit last spring, with much of it due to the cost needed for renovations of fair facilities. The outstanding debt and unpaid premiums to 2013 exhibit winners forced the fair to be stripped of its ability to host some of the classic agricultural events, and standard fair events such as the Pageant Queen were moved to August's Decatur celebration. Last year's Fairground Festival was the first time in more than 150 years that the traditional county fair was not held, with officials openly stating their intention. The festival was focused on turning a profit and helping the organization back into solvency. As it enters this fair season, the board still faces a $130,000 deficit, but Wilson said it's progress. The board has raised money from renting space at the fairgrounds for private events, as well as having space for boat owners to store their vessels for the winter. But the majority of money raised for the fair board has been bingo nights held weeknights at the fairground. These bingo nights have been a surviving force for us, said President Tom Bennett. The bingo and raffles have really helped us get closer to this goal. Though he has only been on board for 2 years and was elected president in the fall, Bennett says he notes a sense of optimism that was not there when he first started. He has taken joy in answering calls to the fair and telling people that the fair will be back this year and it won't just be a festival. We have a lot of positives looking forward to where this can go, he said. We're doing good and we're going to be all right. One man who has been able to see all the ups and downs of the fair has been Don Collins, who has volunteered for more than 40 years toward the upkeep and maintenance of the fairgrounds. Though he now lives in Springfield, the 83-year-old still commutes almost every day to Decatur to help prepare the grounds, whether it be checking light systems or the dirt on the horse track. He said the fair still is a few years away from being what it once was, but he was optimistic. It's going to take a few more years, but it's in a better place now than it's been in the past, he said. Officials are hopeful that the rest of the deficit can be paid down before the start of next year's fair, which would mark its 160th anniversary. The hope is that the fair will see a return of the agricultural events, pageant queen contests that has made it a popular destination for so many decades. We've learned a lot, some of the things we wish we hadn't in that way, Wilson said, but I think we can bring back that traditional county fair that people loved, he said. Play day. As school winds down, students race outside. Recess and physical education are not the daily activities they once were, so a whole day outside to run and shout and climb is rare for school kids. I like play day because I get to spend it with my friends, said Davion Mann, a fifth grader at South Shore Schools, breathless after a game. Most of Decatur's elementary schools sets aside a day at the end of the year for fun and games outside, when teachers and staff can let their hair down a little bit and the kids can see them in a different light. South Shores and Enterprise Schools both held play days on Thursday, and Cindy Baker, parent liaison at Enterprise, said the weather couldn't have been more perfect. I'm having a ball, she said while supervising a variety of relay races with kindergartners. Last year, it was 95 and not a breath of breeze. Inflatables were popular, of course, and so were more old-fashioned games such as hula hoop contests, gunny sack races, and giant volleyball, which is a regular volleyball with a giant ball. Enterprise's giant ball was about 4 times the size of a regular volleyball, while South Shore's giant volleyball might have been a bit too big even for Godzilla. It was also lightweight, so the wind kept blowing it away, keeping a horde of giggling children busy chasing it. Because kids are so focused on academics during regular school days, they often don't learn how to win and lose graciously, said Janine Edrington, a teacher at South Shores. Play day is also an opportunity to practice that skill. Some of them lose a game, some of them just have a meltdown, she said. I say it's just a game. Hula hoop is just one of those things you can or can't do, it seems, and Alexis Patton at Enterprise has a natural talent. Most of the students were spinning the hoops around an arm or just goofing with them, while Alexis easily kept her spinning around her waist. I can't do it, said Jacqueline Creason, Alexis's sixth grade teacher. Davis addresses airport drone issues. The future of the Decatur Airport and unmanned aerial vehicles were major issues addressed by U.S. Representative Rodney Davis during a Thursday morning stop in Decatur. About a dozen business leaders and others joined Davis, Republican of Taylorville, at the Decatur Airport, as each took turns over the hour raising their own thoughts and concerns related to almost everything aviation. Covered a range of topics from the use of unmanned aerial vehicles, commonly known as drones, to the importance of the airport to support community businesses. Stu Ellis, a self-described observer of local agriculture, asked Davis about the restrictions placed on the use of drones by agriculture companies and farmers, who can use them to take photos of their crops and get an up-close look at their fields. "It's an important tool for agriculture," he said. "Farmers need technology to remain profitable, and this technology will allow them to do that." Davis agreed with the sentiment, saying the Federal Aviation Administration has been behind on drone regulation, and Congress needs to address it. While he lamented the negative image people have about drones, associating them with the military, Davis said that they can be a very useful tool. "People don't realize the drones we're talking about here is nothing more than a hobby airplane," he said. "I hope to loosen up some of these restrictions." The other topic mentioned by several in attendance was the Decatur Airport being one of several across the country to receive federal funds through the Essential Air Service Program, which allows smaller communities to maintain commercial airline services. The program has been a target of potential cuts by lawmakers, but Davis said he supported it as it allowed airlines to survive in smaller metropolitan areas. "I hate to say it, but we've been more on the defense than on the offense in regard to this program," he said. "I believe it vital for communities like Decatur, but many in my own party and elsewhere do not see it that way." Davis said the best thing people can do is support the local airlines and show the importance of the program, though he added airlines need to improve customer service. Decatur Mayor Mike McElroy said the airport is an essential tool for local employers, and anything that can be done to improve the quality and importance of it must be considered. Front and center. A front porch is probably a prerequisite for a log home like ours. This is by Teresa Churchill, H&R, senior writer. "But for many years, my husband and I saw it as a little more than a bridge to cross between indoors and outdoors. Then we stayed at a couple of bed and breakfasts, first at the Shawnee Hill Bed and Breakfast near Cobden, then the Loft B&B near Petersburg, and discovered the joys of sitting outside with our coffee in the morning, taking in the beauty of nature. So we got the idea to outfit our porch with a small patio table and a couple of chairs. Since then, we've been having a glorious time, listening to a cacophony of birds and trying to identify each call and watching the light from the setting sun spotlight certain leaves in the canopy overhead while casting others into darkness. The amount of time we're spending out on the porch is directly proportional to the number of items that now make their home there. They include a pair of binoculars, wide-brimmed hat, bubble solution left from a couple's wedding, a citronella candle, and a variety of potted plants. Turns out we're also part of a national surge in front porch popularity. The Wall Street Journal calls the feature the friendliest place in the house. We'll just have to see how user-friendly our front porch is as the season changes." Dog owner sought in Fairview Park attack. A weekend dog attack at Fairview Park left a Minnesota man injured and police looking for the dog's owner. Scott McBride, 57, grew up in Decatur and was visiting his parents for the Memorial Day weekend. He had stopped to take a photo of the bikini tree in the park about 9:30 a.m. Sunday morning during his run. After restarting his run, he noticed a large black pit bull, Labrador Retriever mix dog, charging toward him from the area of the dog park. "I'm watching this dog come at me, and I'm not fearful because The dog owner isn't reacting, so I'm thinking it must be friendly, McBride said. The longtime runner had been chased by dogs before and was expecting it to be a bluff. He never stopped running, he said. The dog hit him in the side and McBride tumbled to the ground. The dog bit his right leg, leaving 3 deep puncture wounds before sprinting back to its owner in the nearby parking lot. I yelled and I know he heard me, he said. He never said a word. McBride watched the man load the dog into the back of a black pickup truck and drive off while he lay there bleeding. This is not a commonplace occurrence. This is really unusual, Park District Executive Director Bill Clevenger said of the attack. A park ordinance requires all dogs be leashed in city parks. Park Ranger Tim Boulware said a violation could result in a ticket and a $65 fine. Fairview receives the most visitors out of all of Decatur parks, and Clevenger said the leash ordinances are in place for everyone's safety. We have a wonderful trail system. It's so heavily used, we just have to be courteous with each other. The dog park is only available to registered users who gain entry with the digital pass system, Boulware said. There's no way to track entries, but the officers don't think the man involved uses the dog park. The leash laws are going to be enforced, and people need to keep their dogs on the leash while on the property, Boulware said. The investigation is ongoing, and Boulware encouraged anyone with information to contact the park district. McBride was treated for the bites and Monday drove 8 hours to his home in Minnesota, where he received further treatment for rabies. He will still need to continue the series of shots unless the dog can be found and its rabies status is known. McBride's brother Bruce wrote a lengthy account of the attack on Facebook, asking for help to find the man. By Wednesday, the post had been shared more than 600 times. We are interested in trying to figure out whether we can find that owner or dog, because I'm going through rabies treatment, Scott McBride said. He said he's encouraged by the feedback, and while he isn't up on running yet, the attack hasn't deterred him from visiting Decatur's trails. I would go back there. I love the trails there, McBride said. In state news, state union pushes for bargaining reform. Springfield. Unionized state workers are taking steps to stop a lockout or a strike under legislation being pushed by the union representing 38,000 employees. The proposal, backed by the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees Union, is aimed at countering concerns that Republican Governor Bruce Rauner will lock employees out of their jobs or force a strike when the current labor agreement expires June 30th. The governor seems to be focused on a confrontation, AFSCME Deputy Director Mike Newman said. Contract talks between AFSCME and Rauner have been tense in recent weeks. Memos distributed by the union show the governor is seeking a wage freeze as well as other significant concessions, including increased health insurance costs. The Capital Facts political blog obtained a document this week that showed the Rauner administration is seeking information from state agencies to assess what might happen if a strike occurs. Under current law, prison guards and other public safety workers are barred from striking. The proposed change would extend that as an option to all unionized state workers. If an impasse in contract talks is reached, the legislation calls for the union and the administration to submit a final offer to an independent arbitrator. The arbitrator would receive the offer and then pick one of them. AFSCME is taking a huge gamble on this, said State Representative Mike Smitty, Democrat of Hillsdale, who is co-sponsoring legislation in the House. The legislation is the latest move in an ongoing tussle between Rauner and unions since he took office in January. He's also called for allowing cities to create union-free zones to draw development and has proposed an end to prevailing wage laws. He's also called the relationship between public employees and unions, public employee unions, and politicians a corrupt bargain. If approved, the proposal would be in place for 4 years, a time period matching Rauner's term in office. AFSCME Council 31 Executive Director Roberta Lynch said that the Rauner administration's extreme demands suggest the governor actually wants a confrontation. given this unprecedented threat to the public services we provide, our union bargaining committee voted unanimously to support a temporary provision that allows for arbitration to help avert a strike or lockout. We believe this legislation will allow both parties to continue to negotiate, hopefully to reach an agreement at the bargaining table, and if necessary, to submit our differences to an independent arbitrator, Lynch said. Rauner attorney Jack Vrett, who serves as deputy counsel, general counsel, at the Illinois Department of Central Management Services, said approval of such a change would be sweeping and unexpected. This would completely change the nature of collective bargaining, Vrett said. Republican members of the House Labor Committee panned the idea. You're trying to circumvent the negotiating process, said State Representative Dwight Kaye, Republican of Glen Carbon. The legislation is House Bill 1285 and Senate Bill 1229. Community college reform hit snag in State Senate, Springfield. A proposal aimed at reining in administrative costs at Illinois community colleges hit a snag Thursday. Justice Governor Bruce Rauner's efforts to reform worker compensation and civil justice laws have been blocked. Democrats, who control the state Senate, called on the sponsor of a crackdown on administrative perks to hold on the measure for further study. At issue is legislation that would cap severance packages given to departing college presidents and limit the length of future contracts. The legislation was designed to address outcry over a $763,000 severance deal given to former College of DuPage president Robert Bruder. Although the legislation was approved in the House on a unanimous vote, Democrats on the Senate Higher Education Committee suggested it needed more work. Opponents said the state should butt out of regulating the community colleges. That's why your local trustees are elected, said Liz Brown of the Illinois Council of Community College Presidents. The proposal would force community college trustees to vote on any severance or contract extension given to top administrators. The initiative would also limit the size of future community college buyout packages to no more than 1 year's salary and benefits. The measure appeared to have momentum after Democrats issued a report questioning salaries and contracts given to community college leaders throughout the state. State Senator Michael Connolly, Republican of Lyle, said he hopes to hold hearings on the issue this summer and bring a revamped version to the General Assembly this fall. The legislation is House Bill 3593. In weather, right now it's 74 degrees, humidity is 76%, dew point is 66. Today, scattered thunderstorms, high around 85 degrees, winds south-southwest at 10 to 20 miles an hour, chance of rain is 40%. Tonight, scattered thunderstorms this evening, becoming more widespread overnight. Low, 67 degrees. Wind, southwest at 10 to 15 miles an hour. Chance of rain, 80%. Tomorrow, thunderstorms. High, around 75. Winds, southwest, shifting to north at 15 to 25 miles an hour. Chance of rain, 80%. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated May 29th, 2015. It's about 2:30. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.